I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey, it's Sprague here. Really appreciate you listening. You're about to get some podcast excellence. It's presented by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Dirt and Sprague on Football Friday on 1080 The Fan.
The autumn wind is a pirate, blustering in from sea. With a rollicking song, he sweeps along, swaggering boisterously.
This is a Football Friday edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Driven by Gresham Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. For the lowest prices on cars and trucks on the east side of Portland, visit dodgeofgresham.com. Gresham Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, a short drive from anywhere.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Hey, welcome back in. Dirt and Sprague on a Friday, right here on Portland Sports Leader 1080 The Fan. Hope your Fridays are going well. Lots to get to here in the second hour of the show. We're going to have some fun, man. Lonzo Ball sucked last night, and that was awesome to watch.
Yes, it was.
That was awesome. You know what was really weird, though? Rooting for Patrick Beverley. That was really weird.
Is it easier that he's in a Clippers uniform?
No, I don't think it made it any easier.
By the way, now, I don't know how much I should factor in the Lakers, but the Clippers actually looked like they knew what they were doing.
They did. They looked like they, yeah. Crawford was walking around this morning saying, finally, they're freed of Chris Paul and his ball domination.
So,
like, wait, what?
So, yeah, it's real interesting. I mean, I know Blazer fans probably like off the moon. I mean, they were up 60 at one point in that. And I'm like,
60 points.
And I'm like, all I know is Phoenix sucks.
That doesn't happen in the NBA.
That's all I
though.
Knew after that game right? was Phoenix stinks.
That's supposed to happen in the NBA. Yeah, so I want to have some fun with that. You know who actually made a really good statement, and I'm going to be curious to see if this comes true all year? Snoop Dogg hit the nail on the head with that. And I'll tell you what he said coming up at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk ALCS, take a look at some Pac-12 games here in a moment. But Oregon's going on the road down to L.A. this weekend, taking on UCLA. If you're wondering, if you're a betting man, the spread currently is at 6 for UCLA. So just shy of a touchdown. It's been bet down a little bit over the course of the week. Some money coming in on Oregon. The over-under is 68, and a lot of that's going to be on can Oregon's defense slow down Josh Rosen. But, you know, this is an interesting game to me for a number of reasons, because we hadn't seen an Oregon offense look that bad in a long time. I maintain since 2007 when they got shut out at UCLA on their like 8th string quarterback when Dixon went down.
I didn't watch a lick of this game because we were in Papa Swag 70th birthday party mode.
Well, you didn't miss anything, Swagger. They couldn't move the ball.
So I was running around and we finally got to a watering hole that had the game on. And I was like,
whoa.
Oh, all right.
Look at that. That's a rough one.
I don't
one.
Need to worry about that.
Nope.
Another don't need round. To watch. Let's go.
Don't need to watch the end of that one. But, I mean, the reason why it's fascinating is because UCLA has statistically the worst defense in the Pac-12. They're giving up over 520 yards of offense per game. They're giving up over 300 yards per game on the ground.
And that would be...
Think about that.
Yeah, if the Ducks can't get the running game going
think about that.
And figured out in this one, then yeah, you've got some issues. So, this is about... All this game is about, okay, which defense can... scheme to get stops and, more importantly, turnovers. You know, every coach will say turnovers are crucial, but especially in this one where you expect both offenses to sustain drives frequently. So unless they shoot themselves with penalties or their own mistakes, i.e. turnovers, and whoever can get a two-score lead, this goes back to the old Oregon Chip Kelly days. The defense was designed to create turnovers.
Yeah, and get it back to the offense.
And get a two-score lead and then let your offense and the pressure of the scoreboard and the clock
lead to it.
be your extra defender on the other team to take them out of whatever game plan they wanted to have coming in.
Yeah, and you lean on people. And that's where I look at this one. And look, I mean, the way the defense played last week is a major concern, because I wasn't surprised Bryce Love had some success. I know he ended up leaving in the second half. I think he rolled his ankle or whatever it was. But they didn't need to do much offensively in the second half. But I was shocked at how bad the secondary was last week. And if you can't slow down Stanford's passing attack, and I know you're geared up for the run, I get that. You're in one-on-one situations, and you won't be in those type of positions this week. But if you can't slow down that passing attack, I'm sorry, Josh Rosen is going to rip you to shreds, because he's throwing the ball for 400 yards per game.
Yeah, this is where we need to see some of those young guys make some growth. You know, early in the season, you know, I saw, hey, they were in position. It was just a matter of turning around, finding the football, making a play on the ball, one, to break things up, and two, to avoid getting pass interference penalties. But it doesn't appear that they're making that progression. They're fast enough. I think they understand it. They're, you know, a lot of times they're right there in position. You got to find the football. You have to know when he gets rid of it and when to turn and look.
Yeah.
If they can do that, then I think we can see things, you know, come together. That, and they've got to figure out who's going to cover that big tight end.
Yeah, I mean, good luck there. Their linebackers are banged up. And look, even when they were in position to make plays last week, they weren't. I mean, they couldn't make them. Arian Springs had one in the end zone where he was facing the guy, and they both knew the ball was coming. And he got boxed out like it was an NBA game. And so, look, the secondary needs to play better. But, you know, one thing that Sprague and I have disagreed on all week is what Oregon should do from an offensive standpoint, because he has maintained that they need to get more creative in the passing game, that at some point you just have to trust Burmeister to throw the ball. And they didn't even try and throw it last week. And I honestly couldn't disagree more, because I think you're in a situation this week. Like, look what UCLA went through last week. They were playing Arizona, a team that's good but not great. I think Arizona's a good team this year. They knew Arizona was going to run the ball. That's what Rich Rodriguez offenses do. They run the football, especially now with the quarterback change down there. Knowing that Arizona was going to try and run the ball on them, Arizona still was able to run for 457 yards. And I'm in a position right now, if I'm Arroyo, the offensive coordinator, if I'm Willie Taggart, the head coach, I am not calling a passing play until I absolutely need to. I don't care if they're loading the box. I don't care if they know it's coming. I don't care if they're geared up for it. I don't care how many of your offensive linemen aren't playing. Make them prove that they can stop the running game before you call a passing play, because they had a spot last week. I think the first interception that he threw, which was a great play that Burmeister threw, it was in a 2nd-and-3 situation. They ran the ball for 7 yards on first down and then decided to air it out. I get it. You want to have some balance on offense, but you throw that pick and it changed the landscape of the game early on. And I don't want to put them in those spots. I think if we, you know, it's easy to criticize not coming up with more creative play calls and not getting Burmeister on the outside and not maybe calling more play action. I understand that, but I think if he calls 25 passing plays this week and Burmeister has an awful weekend, we're going to come in here and say, well, why the hell did you throw the ball so much? Run it. What's going on here? So I'm hoping they stay committed to the running game. It will be interesting to see how effective they can be considering how banged up they are on the offensive line. But, you know, some of the intrigues and really curiosities I have out of this game are, you know, how do they bounce back from last week? You know, we've seen Oregon bounce back from a loss before. They had to do it when they lost Arizona State, and they responded well, and I like to see that. But this is different. You got your ass kicked last week, and you were embarrassed on TV by Stanford. David Shaw ran up and down the field on you. You couldn't do anything on offense. That was as bad as it could possibly get. How do you emotionally and mentally respond to that? And I think this is a young football team we're continuing to learn things about. You know, and then on top of that, I mentioned the secondary. Can they get the passing game? You know, can they slow down the passing game of UCLA? But this is a big one for Oregon because we don't know when Justin Herbert's going to come back. And he's back at practice. The people I'm talking to down there are fingers crossed he could be back for the Utah game next week. And that's a pretty speedy recovery. And even if he's back, he's not going to be 100%. Utah's a good team. And then the next week you're against Washington. You look down the stretch, Arizona's not the gimme that we thought it was going into the season, or maybe thought it was a couple weeks back. So when you have these chances, UCLA has a terrible defense, and it's a game that Oregon should be in. It's a close spread. You're on the road. You should be in it. This is a big one if Oregon's able to pull it away, that you almost lock in that bowl game because you got a couple more to get.
If you expect to be bowl eligible and get to that 7 or 8 wins, this is one you got to have.
If you lose this game and you fall to 4-4, that the idea of making a bowl game is tough.
This might be one where, look, coaches hate the term must-win games, but I wonder if Willie Taggart turns up the urgency with something like this and maybe, you know, starts to put a little more stress to find out what guys are made of, some of these young guys.
Right.
And turn the screws and raise the level of expectations and standards. You're halfway through the season. Even the freshmen that have been playing, it's like, hey.
Yeah, you got six games under your belt.
You know what you need to do now. You have to start doing it in the games if you expect to hold your position sort of stuff. He would never say that probably in the, you know, it's like, well, you know, we're still learning. We're still developing. We still have plenty of season left. But I wonder if internally the screws are being tightened a little bit and find out, hey, who's, you know, remember, he's got what is right now a top five recruiting class in the wings to come in next season, where there is, in theory, more talented freshmen at certain positions than are currently playing.
Right, guys are ready. They're coming in, so your job's going to be on the line.
I wonder how much of that maybe is being intimated in practices at this point in the season.
Yeah, and somebody pointing out, I mean, even last week, I know they only scored 7 points. They couldn't move the ball much, but they did average, you know, about 6 yards per carry against Stanford. They moved the ball well on the ground. Freeman had a good game. Brooks James had a good game. Even Burmeister had a couple of carries. So we'll see how different the offense looks. Cut down on the penalties. Don't turn the football over. Force a couple of interceptions, and you can make this thing a ball game and run the damn football, because UCLA can't stop the run. One of the worst run defenses in the country. We'll see if Oregon can keep it close. The spread is at 6 right now. So folks are thinking Oregon, folks in Vegas think Oregon can keep this within a touchdown down in LA. We'll make some picks on that game coming up, close out the show, some final thoughts on Oregon and UCLA. But let's stick in the Pac-12. I want to take a look at the other games on the slate this weekend because they're pretty entertaining to me. Arizona and Arizona State, how do they bounce back from the last two games? Can the Cougars bounce back? And then USC, is this the weekend that they get exposed? We'll make some picks in the Pac-12. Talk Pac-12 football next on 1080 The Fan. Hey, we'll make fun of Lonzo Ball coming up at the bottom of the hour. Verlander, can you save the day in Houston? Got to talk some Blazers at some point. Probably do that coming up at 2 o'clock. They play the Pacers tonight. No Miles Turner for Indiana. Blazers get CJ McCollum back, so good things pointing in the direction of the Blazers to get to a 2-0 start. And, of course, we'll Sprague the line coming up in just about an hour. Sprague sent me his picks. We got him. I'll go against Kevin Todd, see if those guys can pick some winners this weekend in football. I do want to take a stroll around the Pac-12, though, because I'm pretty intrigued by the games this weekend, to be honest with you. And, you know, there's a lot on the line with some of these, and I think we're still questioning who certain teams are. And you know, the more we get a chance to see them, the more we'll find out. But I want to start with the big one of the weekend, and that is USC and Notre Dame. It's a 4:30 game. You can see it on NBC. Great rivalry game renewed. If you're wondering, the spread in this one, Notre Dame favored by 3.5 points. The over-under is 65.5, and it feels like a lot of people are falling in love with Notre Dame this week, that everybody's liking the Irish in this case. Their running game has been pretty darn good. They're running the ball for over 300 yards per game, 308 to be exact. Their defense has been decent, not great, but decent. Holding teams only 16 points per game. And they're sitting there at 5-1, only one loss. The only loss they have this year was against Georgia by 1 point. And at the time, it looked like a bad loss. But now that Georgia is where they're at, not a bad one for Notre Dame at all. But I'm actually going to go with USC in this game. I know the spread's 3.5, so you got a chance there to lose by a field goal and still cover the spread on the road. But I've bought in more to the Trojans than some this year, and that's been kind of a constant all season long, that every time they have one of those games that you think they're going to lose, you think they're going to fall flat, you know, everybody's waiting to talk some smack, and then they end up finding a way to win, like they did against Texas, like they did against Cal, like they did last week, last weekend as well, but against Utah when they came back and won. The Sam Darnold factor to me is what sets them apart from other teams, because Notre Dame, coming into this, yes, I mean, they have one of the best rushing offenses in the country at 308 yards per game. That's not necessarily the weakness of USC's defense. They're giving up about 140 yards per game on the ground. But Notre Dame really does struggle to throw the football. And this is a game where you have two teams closely matched. I don't expect either one to blow the other one out. Both of them that can score points, and they're averaging about 470 yards of offense. Both of them are. So you get in this spot late in the game in the fourth quarter, and you need a guy to pick up a 3rd-and-8, a 3rd-and-7, and find a way to win. I don't know if I can trust Notre Dame's passing game to do that. I think Sam Darnold is continuing to figure things out. I trust him more than I trust anything on Notre Dame. I know he's looked bad at times, but last weekend was a prime example. He doesn't need to play great for four quarters to find a way to win. He reminds me, and I've said this all season, it reminds me of Jameis Winston that year at Florida State, where they get off to slow starts, they're just trailing at the half, they're not playing good. Everybody says, wow, what's wrong with Winston in Florida State? And then he comes out and he shreds the defense, and they find a way to win. I think USC is going to go into Notre Dame and find a way to win this weekend.
The Pac-12 desperately needs them to do that. If you want to talk about, we always talk about how, you know, teams play 13-10 games in the SEC and an unranked South Carolina beats a Florida or whatever, and how you know, stacked that conference is versus you get a similar thing out in the Pac-12, and it's like, well, everybody's just mediocre. USC going to Notre Dame and having a statement and getting out of there with a win, and if they can do it by double digits, I think that'll wake everybody up and say, oh, well, maybe the Pac-12 is a little deeper than we actually give them credit for.
Yeah, I mean, if they win this game, they're firmly right back in that conversation. You know, we all wanted to pronounce them dead against one, you know, when they lost to the Cougs a couple weeks back, but they win this ballgame, they're right back in that conversation. They'll be a top seven ranked team in the country. It's a marquee win. They already beat Stanford. That Stanford win looks really good now with the way Stanford's playing football. Texas, I think, is better than a lot of people expected this year as well. So that close one doesn't look as bad as it did at the time. So, I like USC this weekend to cover the spread. I think they win on the road in South Bend. The other one up, this is an early one on Fox Sports 1, 12:30. And how about these two teams? Utah, fresh off a couple of really tough losses at home to Stanford, on the road to USC last week. And then Arizona State, they just won their Super Bowl. They beat a top five team for the first time in over 20 years as they knocked off Washington last week. What jumped out to me, and sometimes you see spreads like this, you don't want to fall for it. So maybe Vegas knows more than I do. Well, they do know, but maybe they got something here in this game that I don't know about. Utah's favored by 10 in this ballgame. 10.
Is Huntley back?
He's supposed to be back, but it's not 100% yet. And even then, he's missed a couple of weeks. That spread to me is way too high. I think it's a sign of disrespect to Arizona State.
Yeah.
And who's a good football team.
Well, and it's just, you know, you saw what they did to Oregon earlier in the year. Then you see what they do to Washington, and you're just scratching your head with Todd Graham, and you look at Kalen Ballage, and you look at those receivers, and you're like, how are they not more consistent week to week?
They should be more consistent. That's
how
always the knock on Todd
Graham. Not an 8-9 win team, maybe, you know, on the edge of competing in the South Division.
Right.
Because you look individually and some of the talent that they have on both sides of the ball, and you're like, they don't look like most of the other guys in the Pac-12.
N'Keal Harry is one of the best wide receivers in the country. I'm with you. Manny Wilkins is having a good year this year. Ballage is good in the running game. Defensively, they've really struggled, but then last week they come out and they hold Washington to 7 points. I know the Huskies missed a ton of field goals in that ballgame, but they kept coming up with stops when they needed them, and to hold that offense to 7 points, that's damn impressive. So, I'm not going to go out on a limb and say money line, take them on the road in Utah, but 10 points is too much to me. Utah struggles to move the ball. I don't care what defense they're going against. And, you know, as much as we can point to Arizona State, maybe say letdown factor from a big win, how about you flip that and you say, look at the last 2 weeks Utah's had. They're emotionally spent. They had to play Stanford and USC in back-to-back weeks, tough physical losses. The emotion of losing a game on a two-point conversion, failed attempt, that's tough to have happen. They thought they were going to beat USC last weekend. Now they got to gear back up and play a good Arizona State team. I like Arizona State to cover the spread. You know, probably the hottest team in the conference right now, based on what they've done offensively the last 2 weeks, is Arizona. Whew, Khalil Tate, are you kidding me? He's running all over people, and they're taking on Cal. Cal's coming off their big win of the year, dominating Washington State last week on a Friday night. So you got 4-3 Cal, 4-2 Arizona. The spread in this one, Arizona -3. I love Arizona in this game.
Yeah, this will be.
Arizona.
I think this will be Justin Wilcox's toughest week of coaching this season. If his kids think that they've accomplished everything for the year after that win,
their best defender, by the way, done for the season.
Yeah,
too.
How do you bring them back down to earth and get them ready for a completely different attack that's just as potent as the Cougars' offense can be?
Like, what they're doing on offense is ridiculous right now. And look, a lot of that is pointing to, well, Colorado and UCLA don't have great defenses. And by all means, they do not have great defenses. But what Khalil Tate's done running the football, it's blowing me away, man. They've scored 45 points against Colorado, 47 against UCLA. Cal's better defensively than both of those teams, but they're still giving up about 150 yards per game on the ground, over 420. They actually give up more yards per game than Arizona's defense does. So I don't know why this spread is only 3. They're giving Cal some credit. I do like Cal. I think they're a much improved team, much better than we thought they would be coming into the season. But when Rich Rod finds his quarterback, man, we've seen that in the past. That offense is so tough to slow down. And he looks like he's found it this year. They're running all over people. I like Arizona to go into Cal and find a way to win. It's only a field goal favorite. Then the last one, you can hear this one over on 910 tomorrow night. The Cougs trying to bounce back. It's a good bounce back opponent. They get Colorado this weekend. Colorado's a team that's been up and down. They're not looking great. Struggled with Oregon State. 10-point spread's big, though, up in the Palouse.
Yeah, I think I would take the Cougs. I mean, if they didn't, you know, after just getting embarrassed at Strawberry Canyon and then embarrassed again by Mike Leach in the postgame, you know, whatever, you know, self-awareness.
What did he say? We're a bunch of sorry front runners, I think was his verbiage. That he used.
Something like that, yeah. So if they don't respond, plus if you go watch the tape of Oregon State of Colorado, the Beavs moved the ball up and down the field other than the last 7 yards.
They should have won that game.
So the Cougs offense, I think, should come out and go nuts. And if they don't, you might see Hilinski again.
Yeah, that's true. After the way Luke Falk played, I was surprised Luke Falk didn't get pulled earlier in that game against Cal. He was getting banged up. He wasn't look good. He didn't look healthy. The hand was banged up.
Leach would be at the point of, yeah. You know, and for Luke Falk, it's he gets in his head. He gets in his own way, overanalyzing, overthinking, because he knows that offense inside and out. And sometimes he just, all right, kid, go in there, drop back. Read one, read two, and sling it.
Yeah, just go. Yeah, go execute the offense.
And if those aren't there, pull it down and run.
Right. I do like Washington State in this game. 10 seems like a big spread, but you're counting on the bounce back effort after their embarrassing loss at Cal. I like them at home against 10. Good team to bounce back against in Colorado because that back end of the schedule for the Cougs is tough. So you get the momentum going. You win this week. You're 7-1, 4-1. You're still in all those conversations in the Pac-12, which they need to be. So there's some picks around the conference. Should be a good one. I think. A lot of intrigue about all those games. USC a chance to make a statement for the conference. Arizona State, we're wondering how good they are, and the Cougs bouncing back. It's going to be a good weekend in the Pac-12. I'm excited to watch it starting tomorrow. Hey, did anyone enjoy watching Lonzo Ball get shut down as much as I did? Snoop Dogg made some sense, and how about Russell Westbrook's stat line? Some notes around the NBA. We'll do that next. Hey, can Verlander save the day in Houston? Also, when do we start pointing the finger somewhere else in Washington? We'll do that coming up in 10 minutes. I want to talk a little NBA, though. We'll get back into the Blazers coming up top of the hour. They play the Pacers tonight, game 2 of 82. How about this? We got a little breaking news in the NBA. This could change things a little bit. It's been a rough year of injuries so far. And we got another one to add to the list. So the Rockets have officially listed Chris Paul's day-to-day with a knee problem. But Mark Stein is reporting, now of the New York Times, love that he's still reporting on the NBA, got a new job after ESPN. He's reporting there's fears in Houston that he could be sidelined for over a month, according to league sources, with a knee injury. Ruh-roh, Rockets. How about that one? Injuries going down all over the place. Now Chris Paul could be missing a month in Houston. That changes things a little bit. So something to keep your eye on. He's officially listed as day-to-day, but they're just kind of going over things and wondering how long until he gets back. You know, lost in all the sports stuff last night. Yeah, the Dodgers winning the NLCS. You had a great Thursday night football game, and it really was a good night in sports. We talked about the whatever sports eclipse, whatever you call it, where you had all four major events going on in the same day, the NBA, the MLB, NFL, and the NHL. But loss in that a little bit for me was the Laker game last night. They were the second half of the TNT doubleheader. And I went into the day thinking, I don't want to watch that game. I don't want to give them the ratings. You know, LeVar Ball is one of those guys that's probably going to run around and tout like how many people watched his NBA debut. So I didn't want to fall into that trap. And then I did. I couldn't resist. I couldn't pass it up as the day was going on. And the Dodger game was a blowout. Thursday night football was over with. That was a great game. And I thought, all right, let's tune this in and let's figure it out. I'll tell you what, that was a great decision because you saw, if you watched that game last night, Lonzo Ball in his NBA debut, he was 1 of 6 from the floor, 1 of 3 from three. He went to the free throw line once. He missed both of his free throws. He was a minus 14, which was almost it was the second worst on the team. Only 3 points. He had 4 assists, and Patrick Beverly made him look like a fool last night in his NBA debut. A fool. And I got to tell you, I loved watching that. I really did. That family's been driving me nuts now for months, and all the hype around him. His dad won't shut up. He was even on SportsCenter last night, and watching him struggle brought me a lot of joy. And it was a weird feeling because I was rooting for Patrick Beverly, a guy that I hate and haven't liked for a long time. And it was strange having to root for somebody like that. But I thought Snoop Dogg hit it on the head. Of all people, Snoop Dogg said this after the game last night, and it'll be interesting to watch moving forward. But Snoop Dogg said it was like his dad threw him into the lion's den with pork chop shorts. And that's what his rookie season in the NBA is going to be like. And I thought you saw it last night. Patrick Beverley's a good defender. That's all he wanted to do was embarrass Lonzo Ball. And I think he's going to get that 81 more times.
Oh, yeah. No question about that. Everybody's going to go after him. And LeVar won't shut up until either, one, he creates a problem for the Lakers that forces Magic and Jeannie Buss to publicly
distance themselves. Cut it out.
And say, he does not speak for us. You are not welcome at practice or whatever. Go away. Or Lonzo says, you are making my life much more difficult than it already is as a number two overall pick in his rookie year. Would you just get out of the limelight?
Right.
Step away from the microphone and let me figure this out.
I thought that was a great
way to put
it.
Those are the only two things that are going to, and those might not even be enough.
No, even if that happens, he's still going to be enemy number one of the NBA. And so many guys have circled that game on the counter. And I think there's a lot of young guys in the league that can benefit from playing on bad teams. You're coming in maybe in the NBA in 82 games, you catch people sleeping. There's games you sleepwalk through.
Also,
and there's guys that can take advantage of that. He's not going to get that this year.
All those people who thought the Lakers could sneak into an eight spot.
Yeah, no.
Can you guys calm down? That roster is not very good yet.
No, that team sucks. And look, somebody's texting in, you know, I hope ESPN stops handing him a mic after the game. Amen to that.
That's part of it.
Amen to that. And look, it's not going to help him every time he comes out. Because there was a back and forth. Apparently, Beverly was yelling at people walking off the floor. He was yelling at LeVar, and they were going at it. You know, and he came out after the game and said, you know, who's Patrick Beverly? Nobody knows who you are. It's like, well, he's been in the playoffs. People know who he is, you jackass. Just stop running your mouth. But just watching him struggle was a lot of fun. And it'll be interesting to see how it goes moving forward. But I was talking, Sprague brought this up yesterday after the show because he was down in LA a couple weeks ago and he did the sports extravaganza weekend. And he was talking to a lot of people from LA that are Laker fans. Obviously, there are plenty down there. They love LeVar Ball. And that's what Sprague, now, and this is a small sample size from the LA sports fans that he talked to.
Because he's totally LA.
They love him.
Oh, I understand.
And he said, you know, when they asked him, they said, well, what's the perception of LeVar Ball up in Portland? What do people think about him? He was like, we hate it. We can't stand him. Are you kidding me? And looked at him like he was shocked. They were like, how could you hate him? He's funny. He's entertaining. He goes against the grain. It's like, what? So that made me root against him even more after finding that out yesterday, that people down there love him.
Isn't that everything you need to know about L.A.?
That tells you all you need to know, doesn't it?
Flash versus substance?
Really is. So Lonzo Ball made his NBA debut last night. It didn't go well. He was 1-6 from the floor. I mean, look, he's going to be better than that. It was a bad debut. I still think he can have a good career, but it's going to be a tough rookie season because every team that he plays, there's going to be that Patrick Beverley kind of guy that says, you know what, I want to shut this family up.
Well, that and his dad has set the expectation that he should be playing, you know, he should do what Magic did in his rookie year and lead him to an NBA Magic came into a team that had
somebody named Kareem.
Kareem and who else was on that? Was Norm Nixon still on that team? Michael Cooper, Jamal Wilkes. I mean, the Lakers were pretty good when he showed up.
A little better than Luol Deng. Say that, go out on a limb. So rough one for Lonzo Ball in his debut last night. One other note I had about the NBA and watching, I didn't watch a ton of this game, but I was curious just to see how they look because they're one of those teams in the West you got to keep an eye out for in Oklahoma City. And if this is something that continues, I'll tell you, this should be something to watch because one of the main criticisms last year for Westbrook was the amount of shots that he took. And he was just jacking stuff all over the floor. And the argument that I made against it was, well, he doesn't have much to pass to.
Exactly.
Just keep shooting, right? Well, get his stat line last night. He had 7 turnovers, so if you don't like Westbrook, you're going to point to the 7 turnovers. He had a triple-double. What did he score? 21 points, 16 assists, and 10 boards.
Yeah, 16 assists, folks.
7 of 12 from the floor. He only attempted one three-pointer. He didn't force the issue. Both Melo and George took more shots, and only the one three-pointer. He got to the free throw line. If he's going to play like that, that's scary.
Yeah, that's a situation where he just didn't trust his other guys the way he trusts. He will defer to George and to Melo. Plus, he doesn't have to be on the floor for 44 minutes.
No, he doesn't
have
to do it all. It's not all on his shoulders. And you can tell last night he trusts. I mean, it's 12 shots.
If they can play enough defense and figure out, you know, with Steven Adams, how to finagle the defense, if Melo was willing to play. We know Paul George will play some defense. And Westbrook, if they can get Melo comfortable with what they want him to do defensively, so he's engaged, whether it's rebounding, whether it's you know, playing kind of the help side on the weak side and getting in there and getting steals, then it might work in OKC.
Yeah, so something to keep an eye on last night. They played their first game. They went into New York. It was the Melo return, and they blew out the Knicks 105-84, the final. But we always ask, you know, how can they share the ball? How's that going to work? We did it with Golden State last year. You saw Steph Curry and Klay Thompson take a backseat a little bit to Klay Thompson, and Westbrook willing to do it one game in. We'll see if he can do it for 81 more. But only 12 shots, a triple-double, 21 points, 16 assists, 10 rebounds, and 7-12 from the floor. They get a blowout win in their first game. We'll talk some more NBA coming up top of the hour. Blazers play the Pacers tonight. Can they carry the momentum from their big win down in Phoenix into Indiana and get off to a 2-0 start? But Houston is in some trouble. Can Verlander save the day? Crunch Time is next on 1080 The Fan.
The pressure's on.
You ask what's the difference in the past and this is just executing at crunch time.
Who's feeling the heat?
When you win, it's the greatest feeling in the world. And when you lose, it's the lowest feeling in the world.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Always $9.95 per month. So why would you ever pay more for a gym membership?
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Always $9.95 a month. So why would you ever pay more for a gym membership? Talks and Blazers coming up top of the hour. Checking on the Pacers tonight. Chance said we talked a lot about that easy schedule early on in the season. See if they can take advantage of it to a 2-0 start. Talk about that. Take a look at college football as a whole at 2:15. Then don't forget our boy Kevin Todd coming on to make some picks and hopefully win you some money at 2:30. But you know, you make trades in the towards the end of the MLB regular season for moments like this. These are the times that you lean on guys that you go out and acquire. And you remember with Houston, the storyline around them as the trade deadline came and went, they didn't make one of those big splashy moves that maybe some thought they needed. And the Astros players came out and said, you know, we're a little frustrated.
Yeah, Dallas Keuchel was
like, hey, we needed some help. We wanted some help. We wanted you to go get somebody and you didn't. Astros management listened to them. They went out and landed Justin Verlander, and he has lived up to the hype. He's been dominant since coming over to Houston in the trade, and he's a big part of the reason why they're here now in Game 6 of the ALCS. And he had a quote today, said, this is why I'm here. And indeed it is. They went out and got Justin Verlander, and now he starts with the season on the line tonight against the Yankees. Get some of these numbers. In the three games at Yankee Stadium, the Astros were outscored 19-5. And in the series now, five games in, they're hitting .147 as a team. That's got to change if they want to try and find a way into the World Series. But I'm jacked for this one tonight to watch once again Verlander take on that Yankees offense. Game two was awesome, and I hope tonight lives up to the hype as well.
Yeah, and I think Verlander understands what it takes to go out there and take the ball in this situation. And so he's willing to embrace that specific pressure. And he, you know, I think he's going to try and, you know, strike out Judge and Sanchez, you know, in their first at bat, see if he can do that and really get the crowd in a frenzy and let all of the hitters know, hey, I got your back. If you guys can scratch out a couple, you don't have to score seven tonight.
Right, right.
Give me a couple.
Give me an early lead.
And we're playing on Saturday.
Yeah, give me an early lead. I'll lean on it. If you don't remember how dominant he was in game two, let me remind you. He got 13 different Yankees to an 0-2 count. 13 of them, he struck out all 13. Or retired, excuse me, all 13. Struck out seven of them. He had 13 Ks in the game. He was dominant in game two, and they really need him to perform well tonight. And I'm with you. I think the big thing for Houston tonight is you can't fall behind early. You know how good the Yankee bullpen is, and we were watching, you know, kind of in the back the other day, that game five game where New York was able to get a, you know, scratch across a couple of runs in the second, scratch across run in the third. You got 2-0, 3-0 lead. And just, I mean, the fear gets into your eyes. You know, once you get to the fifth inning, it doesn't matter, you know, if it's Severino, Tanaka, Sabathia. Doesn't matter who's starting. They can turn it over to that bullpen, and that's all
she
wrote.
Yeah, Robertson, Green, and Chapman, and there you go.
Boom.
So
end of the game.
You've got six innings, five or six innings to get Verlander a 2 or 3 run lead. And Verlander understands his mindset. He's going out with a mindset that, I'm pitching a complete game. I'm going all nine innings.
Yeah, he
I
doesn't want to give it to anybody
140
else.
Pitches if I have to, you know, get the bullpen off the hook, give everybody a rest. Maybe if they have to go to Giles in the ninth, you know, that would be one thing. But yeah, if he's not sharp early and has, you know, relatively painless first two or three innings, gets through that first round of the lineup, he wants to come out. He wants to be dominant. He'd love to have five or six strikeouts the first time through the lineup.
And just have them
and just say, you're not hitting me tonight.
Yeah, and you know, watching those adjustments will be interesting. His career, by the way, in four postseason starts in elimination games, he's 3-1 with a 1.49 ERA. So he's had six, I mean, he's been here before. He's pitched in World Series before, back in his days in Detroit against the Giants. I know that one didn't pan out for him, but he's been in these moments. And you know, the adjustments in the series to me are one of the fun nuances of the game that people don't pay attention to, because you had that with Dallas Keuchel, who was dominant in game one, and he came out in game five, and, you know, they didn't rough him up, but they got to him. He didn't get out of the fourth inning, and up until that point, nobody had touched Keuchel in the playoffs. And that's the tough part about facing a team twice in a series, is that how much do you change their game plan? They go back and watch the film. Are you trying to attack the same spots? Are you not, you know, hitting your same locations? They're going to find a way to hit you. And Verlander talked about that. You know, he said it's tough to face a team. There will be some adjustments on my end, but I have to trust my instincts and what my eyes tell me more than anything. And just the adjustments aspect of going at a group for the second time and a lineup the second time in a series, it'll be fascinating to watch. Verlander gets the hill. Game six tonight. Severino on the other side pitched really well in his start in this series too. So let's give him some credit. That was a really low scoring game. Now he gets a chance to close it out for the Yankees tonight. But game six on the line in Houston should be a lot of fun. You can hear it over on Sister Station, 9:10 a.m. Portland. One other quick note on baseball I did have is, when are the Nationals going to point the finger at somebody else? They always choke in the playoffs, and they always fire the manager. I know they didn't fire Dusty. His contract was up. They didn't renew it, but same story, different year, different manager. What? Well, you can bring a new guy. He's going to choke next year. You're going to fire him too? At what point do you point the finger somewhere
else? They need to look at their starting rotation and go to Strasburg and, you know, the rest of those guys and say, listen, we're paying you boatloads of cash. When it's the playoffs, you've got to get out there and gut out seven innings and be dominant.
Yeah, I saw that today. I just chuckled. Like, oh, yeah, that'll fix things, Washington. Did it fix things with Davey Johnson or Matt Williams when they left? Oh, no, the next guy did the same thing. All right, so there's your strategy.
That's where it starts with that rotation.
Come on, man. So some baseball stuff for you. Game six, I'm pumped. I'm pumped for tonight. Should be a good one in Houston. Can't wait to get home and watch that ball game. Hey, Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness. Always $9.95 a month, so why would you ever pay more for a gym membership? You can find out more about where Sprague and I work out at crunch.com. Loaded final hour for us on a Friday. We'll Sprague the line coming up at 2:30. I got Sprague's picks. You can send some of yours in if you want as well. We'll try and win some money with our boy Kevin Todd coming up at 2:30. Take a look ahead to the weekend slate in college football. Who should be on upset alert? Maybe it's Penn State. Got to talk about that game. Penn State, Michigan should be a good one. That's a big one on ABC tomorrow. But we'll start with the Blazers. Game two for them tonight against Indiana. Can they keep the momentum going? And what does the infusion of CJ McCollum look like? Loaded final hour. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.